Don't have a lot of good news for you today as we kick off our bonus hour of Gwynn and Chris. Orioles complete their sweep of the Padres. 7-5 the final today. Padres fell behind 7-0 on the strength of four Oriole home runs, three of which came in a row.
Yes.
That was annoying.
The three-run home run is also annoying to me. They give up more three-run home runs than I don't know that this to
don't
be true.
Don't get me started.
I know. You know what? I was.
We still never hit one.
I was teasing you earlier in the year, but now it's a thing.
Yeah.
They're giving up three-run home runs like crazy.
We
now.
Just don't hit three-run homers. We've hit eight of them all season. It's the fewest in baseball.
A three-run homer in the playoffs is likely going to lose you a game
or win you one.
Or if you win hit you one.
Yeah, if you hit it. But Padres don't hit a lot of them. They hit eight three-run homers. They've hit three grand slams. The, quote, big fly has not really been much of a part of the Padres' attack. The Dodgers are losing 3-0 in the seventh inning to Pittsburgh. Potentially the Padres will remain just 2.5 back there. But their lead, you know, is down to, I think, one game now over the Mets for the 5 seed. And the Giants and Reds are only 5.5 back if you want to start thinking the unthinkable, right, that the Padres could actually not even make the playoffs. But I don't think we have to quite get there yet.
Hold on. I have a stat on this, Chris. The Fangraphs playoff projections go all the way back to 2014. In that time, no team that had more than a 94.1% chance of making the postseason with 29 games remaining failed to make the postseason. The Padres are at like 98% right now.
But having said that, there's a first time. I mean, you're not in the playoffs until they put that little check mark.
You're right.
So until I see a check mark, there's plenty to deal with. In this hour, our bonus hour, Scraby is going to do something here called Scraby's Statistic Deep Dive.
Yep.
I have no idea what he's going to unearth, but stick around for that. In this segment, Scraby wants to play a little Chris versus the fans. Now, we didn't promote it last segment, so nobody's called in yet. So that's a good thing maybe for you out there who has always wanted to play Chris versus the fans, our little trivia game, a chance to win a trip to Las Vegas.
No.
Oh, we got something different.
We have
a different prize.
It's a new month, so we have a new prize.
All right.
The prize is you will have the chance to win two tickets to the Head and the Heart at Gallagher Square on September 29th. Tickets on sale now at Ticketmaster.com. I got to tell you, every time I read Gallagher Square, it's so hard for me to say that because my sister's her married name is Gallagher, but it's pronounced Gallagher. Anyway.
This place Gallagher Square.
Yes, and I have to remind myself every time it's Gallagher Square. Anyway,
gotcha.
Anyway,
if you'd like a chance to beat me at Chris vs. the Fans, it's our little trivia game. We play it at 4 o'clock every day, so a little different for a 6 o'clock game, but you dial in at 833-288-0973. While you're dialing in to play, we can't do this if we don't quite have the open, so let's do that.
If you had one shot, one opportunity to take down the human almanac himself,
howdy do.
Now is your time.
Listen to me, this guy is dangerous.
Now is your opportunity to win a prize.
Well, I hope you know Gen 4.
Chris versus the Fans starts now on 97.3 The Fan.
All right, we already told you what you are playing for. Now I will read the rules. You have to make it through three questions. Each question will get more difficult. If you get the question right, you move on. If you get it wrong and Chris gets it right, you're eliminated. But if Chris gets it wrong, then you move on to the next question or you win. If you're a first-time player, let us know before we get into it and you'll get that first question for free today. Now, we haven't played in a little bit, so we got some new callers on. This is nice.
Some new contestants. If you're a first-time player, remember.
Tell us.
Let us know.
Please tell us.
You get a freebie.
You get a freebie. Yeah. That is correct. All right, let's go to our first contestant, Tyler. Hello, Tyler.
Hello.
Hey, Tyler.
You ready to play?
How are we doing today?
We're holding together, Tyler.
How are you, Tyler?
Yeah, how about you?
Hopefully better in a few minutes here.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. Yes.
Real quick, Tyler, you didn't play golf yesterday at, where'd I play yesterday?
I don't know.
Mission Trails. Do you play golf, Tyler?
Nope.
Okay, good. Well, no, we had three of us, and we got matched up with a guy named Tyler.
Oh,
so
okay.
I was just saying, that would be funny if this was him, but...
All right, Tyler, here we go. Question numero uno.
Yes. Okay, yeah, number one, right.
Which team is nicknamed the Brew Crew?
Milwaukee Brewers.
Brewers is correct. I do think it's funny that they're named after beer makers. That's my favorite. Question number
two. Was the original name of the Milwaukee Brewers franchise?
Braves.
No. Ooh. Seattle Pilots.
I knew that.
All right. Go ahead.
All right, Tyler. Second question. Which qualifying starting pitcher has the lowest ERA in baseball this season?
Lowest ERA in all of baseball. Qualified pitchers.
That is going to be Trevor Rogers.
Trevor Rogers, he says.
We're talking starting pitchers.
Now he is a starting pitcher, which is for the Orioles. I don't know that he qualifies, though. Scraby says he doesn't qualify, but don't go anywhere because Scraby has a way of being wrong on these things.
I went to MLB.com and I went to the stats section and I filtered by qualified players.
According to ESPN.com statistics, Trevor Rogers is not a qualifier.
Do we want to give him another guess, or is that his guess?
What I want to do, you're gonna kind of let me just. Can I look at Trevor Rogers?
Sure.
Will you give me a second to look
at
him?
Yeah, you can. Stay there, Tyler.
He pitches for the Orioles. All right, and he has an ERA. It's really good. I'm kind of stretching here. He's got a 1.39 ERA.
Okay.
But he's only pitched 90 innings. And you have to pitch one inning for every game your team has played. So they played 130 games. So he's really not even close to qualifying. But the 1.39 ERA, I'm going to give it that Tyler knew that much. Give him another second question.
Oh, can he guess?
Oh, would you rather him guess
one?
The actual answer? Do you want to guess the actual answer?
Or do
you want
to give me the second? We can do that.
Which one do you want? A new question or guess again?
Let's go with a new question.
All right. So the answer would have been Paul Skeens, right?
Answer would have been Paul Skeens.
Okay, but that's not his question. All right. Yeah, but Rogers is 1.39, which is quite good, but not enough innings to qualify.
All right. Well, here we go. Another
second question. So on a technicality, Tyler stays in the game.
All right, Tyler. Name two of the three Major League Baseball players to have hit four home runs in a single game this season.
This year, three people have done it.
We talked about it, I think, yesterday.
We did. Got to just come up with two.
This year it's going to be Kyle Schwarber and Eugenio Suarez.
He's got him.
Nice job. No one's ever going to know Nick Kurtz, but I knew it.
You knew Nick Kurtz because you picked him up for your fantasy team, which didn't matter.
All right, nice job, Tyler. That was pretty good. That was pretty good. Here we go. Question number three. You get this right or Chris gets it wrong, and you are qualified for these tickets. Who is the first Hall of Famer inducted... Wait, let me start that over. Who was the first Hall of Famer for the Mariners? Who was the first Hall of Famer the Mariners ever had?
Ooh. Trick question,
Jack. Pretty tough.
Let's go. Oh, who was first? Let's go with the kid.
Mariners Hall
the kid.
Of Famer. He goes with Griffey.
And Griffey.
Not Junior. Bad. He got it.
You are correct.
Yeah,
wow. Tyler worked his way through that.
Sometimes it pays to go with the obvious.
Yes. All right, Tyler, you stay right there. I'm going to have to get your information in the break.
I do want to say that, I'd have to see what year he was inducted. I'm giving it to Tyler because we've already gone through 12 technicalities. I believe Gaylord Perry made it into the Hall of Fame before Ken Griffey Jr., and Gaylord Perry did pitch for the Mariners. So I don't, your question could be argued, I'm saying.
Mariners Hall of Famers.
Yeah. Well, he's not necessarily a Mariner Hall of Famer, but he played for the Mariners. So that question could be twisted into that You see where I'm going with this?
I do, but the right answer was Ken Griffey Jr. So.
Okay, as long as you're sure of that.
Yes.
Yes, Gaylord Perry was inducted in 1991.
Oh, well, yeah, that's way
different.
I doubt
Ken Griffey Jr. was inducted then.
He was inducted in 2016.
Right, but so Tyler's right, in fact, that Griffey is the first acknowledged Mariner.
Okay, thank you.
Into the Hall of Fame.
Thank you.
All right, good job, Tyler. You win the game today. Sorry to everybody else out there. I'm sure there's other people who thought that we should have eliminated Tyler there, but I guess we're in such a bad mood that we tried to do something nice.
Yeah, I'm happy with it because...
You don't have to use any more questions.
Exactly.
You're always happy with that. Pirates, is it over?
It's over. Ohtani just struck
like
out.
Crazy. Yeah, 3-0 final. Pirates do beat the Dodgers.
There's some good news.
The good news is that the Dodgers lost. The bad news is we missed two golden opportunities to pick up ground on them.
I'm not going to worry about that
while they're losing
right
to the Pirates.
I'm just happy it's still there.
Final score, Pirates 3, Dodgers nothing. We got a pretty good tennis going on at U.S. Open. Osaka and Mukova in the quarterfinals. Second set tiebreak. Osaka won the first set. Earlier today, kind of an upset, Scraby. Anisimova, American, mm-hmm. Amanda Anisimova, defeated the number 2 seed Iga Swiatek. And now here was what I thought was pretty impressive about this. Swiatek had beaten Anisimova in the Wimbledon final a month ago.
Oh.
But she didn't just beat her. She double bageled her.
What does that mean? 6-0, 6-0?
6-0, 6-0.
Oh, so she had revenge on
mine. In the championship, embarrassed her on the stage at Wimbledon.
That's embarrassing.
Double bagel. And today, Anisimova came back and beat her.
So. You just kind of made me hungry a little bit with the double bagel.
Yeah, I know. The double bagel does sound good at this point in time. Later tonight, the number one on the men's side, Sinner, is in action.
Trying to keep it drop out? Didn't he drop out of the last tournament?
The minor tournaments, they can drop out.
Okay.
Yeah, not the majors. They don't normally
drop
out. Our guy Taylor Fritz, by the way, last night lost again to Djokovic. 11-0 career for Djokovic against our guy Taylor Fritz. He's got his number, I'd say.
You
got
to win one of them, I guess.
Not last night.
I mean, Djokovic is like one of the best tennis players of all time. So.
He'd have to certainly be in the conversation, if not just the winner of the conversation.
There's Federer. And
yeah, there's some guys.
Nadal.
Yeah, there's guys. But,
Anyway.
NFL news? Anything I need to add in? Or are we going to talk some NFL? Well, we'll talk some NFL at the bottom.
Yes.
We're going to do our division previews for the NFC and AFC North. But when we come back, I can't wait for this. Scraby tackled me in the hallway when I got here.
I did.
He said, I got a segment today. It's called Scraby's Statistical Deep Dive.
Yep.
I said, what is that? And then I said, no. Don't tell me what it is. I want to hear for myself. It's coming up next for all of us to hear on 97.3 The Fan. See if Naomi Osaka can wrap up this match point, but it's one of the longest rallies in U.S. Open tennis history. And now it is over. Naomi Osaka.
It's all over.
She's pulling off a heck of a comeback, Scraby. This is a player who was number one in the world maybe, I'm going to say 6 years ago, 5-6 years ago, won a bunch of majors, and then mentally just disappeared. And, you know, very publicly, you know, just had kind of the mental difficulties. I don't ever want to make fun of anybody's mental situation, so I'm not going to say, you know, breakdowns, whatever you want to say, but she just really couldn't get herself to be able to even play tennis, let alone at this kind of a level.
She was definitely struggling with her mental health.
Really struggling and talk open about it, which I think helps a lot of people. And they saw her struggle, and then she tried to make a comeback, and she kind of did, but she didn't really get all the way back. And then I think she slipped back again, and just, I think it's probably an ongoing thing for her and always will be.
Yeah.
But now, you know, she's back in the U.S. Open semifinals. This is a kind of story that can impact and be an inspiration for a lot of people. You don't have to be a tennis player to be inspired by somebody else who's going through or has gone through what you may go through and see them have success. Gives you the notion that you can do it too.
Yeah, of course.
Everybody's different. Every situation's different. But good on Naomi Osaka for her to get the... back to the semifinals. All right, Padres, the good for them would be to win a game. Didn't happen today. Orioles 7, Padres 5. Rockies are next Friday night. Rockies are now 39-100.
Whoa.
What a season they're having.
That is a season right
there. Yeah, but, you know, right now.
It scares me.
Exactly.
I am so scared about this weekend.
I don't think anybody cares who the Padres are playing right now. They have to just start winning some games and get some starting pitching. And to that end, we don't even know who's going to start Friday night. It's TBD at the moment.
It is TBD at the moment.
Anyway, but to enjoy and regale us all, here he is. The kind of, I want to say, rankled Mr. Scraby today's game.
I'm rankled.
And he dug up a bunch of deep dive statistics that he just can't wait to share with us. So
I call it a deep dive. It's a deep dive for me, for sure.
Right. Well, without any further ado, what you got, Mr.
All right. You know what? Do you want to start with my thoughts on... I want to break down a Luis Arraez at bat last night, but okay. I'm going to start with this first. Mm-hmm. And so when I was coming in today, heard the last home run hit in that back-to-back-to-back, and I thought, I'm going to look up and see what the Padres are doing against the rest of the league in the last 2 weeks. In the last 14 games, the Padres have given up the fourth most home runs in baseball with 23, which puts them at the top with teams like the Rockies, the Marlins, the Twins, the Nationals, the Orioles, and the Braves. What do those teams have in common?
They're all bad. Yeah.
They've given up 23 home runs in the last 14 games.
The pitching whisperer has gone on leave,
hiatus.
I don't know what's happening. I'm waiting for Niebla to come and ride to the rescue, but you're right. They're pitching, you know.
And let me add this, too, before you get on your pitching.
No,
they've also walked the second most hitters in baseball in the last 2 weeks.
That's a really, you know, intriguing statistic because you can't walk people and be successful.
You can't.
Unless you're Blake Snell. The only guy I know of who can walk people and be successful. But, you know, today the walks were just annoying. How many did they end up having? About eight? About every inning started with a Baltimore guy walked.
Let me see.
Except for three, seven, eight.
Yeah.
Yeah, eight walks today. And, you know, the only inning they didn't lead with a walk was when the guy hit a home run. So, yeah, you got to stop doing that. And that has just not been there. Secret sauce. Their secret sauce is throwing strikes, getting ahead of hitters, all that.
This team is built on pitching. All that Ruben Niebla stuff. So when pitching isn't working, it's going to be tough.
Which is why I think it's funny that people pull their hair out day after day after day with what the lineup is and where everybody bats and who's decisioning making and what's happening. This team wins and loses on pitching.
Mm-hmm.
Right now they're losing on pitching. None of the other stuff. They're scoring runs. They're getting opportunities. They don't hit enough home runs, I will say that. We already talked about it. You like to get the 2-3-run home run more. But, you know, offensively, you know, they're going through the normal ups and downs of a season. But right now the pitching is just
pitching's
unrecognizable.
I'm about to prove to you that pitching is taking them out of the game before they can actually even start the game. But I want to talk about the Twins series real quick because those are... They should have won 2 of 3 from the Twins. They probably should have swept the Twins. That's what good teams do. They lost 2 of 3 from the Twins. And in the last 2 weeks, the Twins have given up the most earned runs, hits, runs. Teams are hitting 305 against them, giving up the third most home runs. They have the highest ERA, and they have struck out the eighth fewest in baseball.
Do you know why? Because the Twins are minor league team right now. And
that's what I'm saying.
You.
That's why it's so annoying that the Padres lost 2 of 3 from the Twins. So let me go back to the Sunday at home against the Dodgers. They lose 8-2, the Padres.
That was the first of the 8 out of 10 that they lost.
First inning, Pivetta gives up one run, but could have been a grand slam. Laureano made that catch. They only got a sack fly on that. Diaz hit a 2-run shot to take the lead, but a 5-run seventh from Jeremiah Estrada doomed them. Then they go up to Seattle. Mariners win 9-6. J.P. Sears gives up a run in the first and 2 in the second. Padres score 4 in the second, but David Morgan gives up 5 in the fifth.
Yeah.
So they lose that game. They ended up winning a game, but Padres again against the Mariners, they won 7-6. Then, on that Wednesday, Mariners win 4-3. Darvish gives up 4 runs, 3-run homer from Suarez. Padres can't make a comeback happen. Then against the Twins, they're down 5-2 in the fourth, down 7-2 in the fifth. Nestor Cortes gives up 3 runs. Then Peralta, Morgan, and Matsui each give up a run, and they lose that game. Then the Padres win 12-3. They won. They were down 3-1 after five. Everything, the floodgates opened after that. Then on that Sunday, Twins win 7-2. It was a bullpen day for the Padres. Joe Ryan is a pretty good pitcher, so I'm not going to be too crazy about that. But they were down 6-0 after 5 and down 7-0 after 7. Monday's game, Dylan Cease gave you 4 innings and only gave up 2. They lose 4-3.
He gave up 2, but it took him 91 pitches.
To get through
it was
4.
It was a struggle.
Yes.
And a half.
Lost to the Orioles on Tuesday night, 6-2. They were down 5-2 after the 5th inning.
Yeah.
And then today, Orioles win 7-5, down 7-0 after 3 innings. Nestor Cortes gives up 6, and then he gives up back-to-back-to-back homers in the 3rd. So that is the kind of the theme right now. They're out of the game before the offense can really get into it. But here, I hate picking on Luis Arraez, but I do not think that he should be in the 2 spot. Here's an at-bat from last night. Bottom of the 5th. Orioles are up 5-2. Runners on third with 2 outs. First pitch, called strike. Not a statue take, but a hittable pitch. So it's 0-1. Second pitch, almost in the same spot as the first. Fouled it off 0-2. Third pitch, takes it for a ball, 1-2. Fourth pitch, about a ball from the top right of the strike zone. He swings at it, fouls it off, probably ball 2. Fifth pitch, another foul, but way low and outside. Probably ball 4 and a walk. And Manny's coming up, but it's still 1-2. Sixth pitch, ball in the dirt, 2-2 count. Seventh pitch, high, and ball 5, but hit weakly to center field, and the inning is over with a guy at third. If Luis Arraez is going to bat second, he needs to be walking. That is what Fernando Tatis Jr. has been doing this year. And you probably disagree with me, Chris, but bottom of the 7, bases loaded, 1 out. A guy who doesn't strike out, struck out. So what are we doing with Arraez in the 2-hole right now? He's not hitting well enough to be in those positions, and we've seen him come up a lot at the end of the game as of late, and I have no confidence that he's going to get on base there. I don't see why the team is so resistant to moving him down in the lineup. I don't know who to put there, but right now Luis Arraez cannot be hitting there because he is not the type of guy that they need when he's hitting 285. He doesn't take walks.
What do you want? What do you need?
What do I need? I need a guy who's going to, instead of swinging at ball 5, I want a guy who's going to take that walk. Now, I know that this is me hyper-focused on Luis Arraez last night, and he homered, I will say. I should give him that as well. But this stretch has not been good for the Padres, and it seems like a lot of the Luis Arraez at-bats can end up in inning killers.
All right, I'm going to just say a couple things because I've done so much on the Luis Arraez.
I know.
First of all, I'm fine. Move him down. Do whatever you got to do. I don't love Luis Arraez so much that I absolutely have to have him there.
Okay.
All right, personally. Doesn't really mean a hill of beans to me. Secondly, I don't know exactly why they want to keep batting him second, but they do. And so I'm going to just go ahead and root for him and support what they're doing. They must see something they like. And when that changes, it will change and he will move out of the 2 spot. But for whatever reason, they like him there.
I know.
And I don't know why I keep arguing about this. He bats second, probably, I'm guessing because I don't know. I'm not in the meeting. But he probably bats second because his track record in his career suggests that he's a 330, 340 batting champion hitter who sprays the ball all over the field and keeps the line moving. This year, he has not been that at all.
Ooh, we even got a mouse.
Agreed.
We even got you doing the mouse
okay,
thing.
I'm just saying, 280, he hasn't been good. He swings at way too many pitches out of the strike zone, but when he led the league in hitting and hit 340, he did the same thing. Nobody complained about it.
Because he was getting on base.
I understand.
He was moving the line.
But this is what he does. He swings at everything, and he puts it all, most of them in play, 90% of the time. And he normally gets a lot more hits to fall in. This year, it hasn't happened. They obviously believe it's going to start happening, or they wouldn't keep him there. So I'm tired of defending him because I'm really defending Mike Schilt and the team. And everyone keeps saying that this team can't win with him batting second. And all I'm going to argue and say is, well, they won all year with him batting second. They were in first place 10 days ago with him batting second. So I can't agree. that they totally have no chance of being successful with him batting second, because by and large, until 10 days ago, they've been very successful. And the last thing I'll say is for the people that say, Chris, you don't get it. Luis Arraez is not the worst hitter. He's the worst two-hole hitter in baseball. Just explain to me what analytic is giving you that belief. Or is it just something you're seeing with your eyes, and you've looked at the Royals' number two hitter, and you've looked at the Indians?
I actually did something last week.
I mean, has everybody looked at every two-hitter hole in the hitter in baseball? And what statistic is it about Arraez that makes him the worst? I just want to know, because there are also statistics that say that Jake Cronenworth is the worst defensive second baseman. There are also statistics that say that Luis Arraez is the worst defensive first baseman, which would then give the playoff-bound Padres the worst right side defense almost in the history of baseball. And I just don't agree. I watch all the games. They don't have the worst right side defense in baseball, but analytically they do. So analytically Arraez is the worst, but I want it explained to me what it is that everybody keeps seeing and keeps trying to call to my attention. They say, Chris, he's the worst number two hole hitter. You don't get it. You're stupid, Chris. You're an idiot. He's the worst. Get over it. Stop defending him. Fine. Explain why he's the worst. What is it?
I got one. A guy who's supposed to see a lot of pitches and a guy who's a contact guy, The notion that he has these long, extreme at-bats is false, because if you look at his pitches per plate appearance this year, the number of pitches he takes per plate appearance, he's 123rd in baseball.
Okay.
3.67 pitches per plate appearance. So a fallacy.
You're pointing out to me that he has 3.67. What does a good number two hitter have? Is that written somewhere? Is it written somewhere that a good number two hitter has to see 5.1?
You're challenging me, and I like this. Last week, these numbers are of last week, because I did this whole Arraez thing. The average two hitter in baseball as of last week has hit 21 home runs this year. Luis Arraez has hit now 7, but as of last week, 6. He's hitting home runs once every 87 at-bats. An average two-hole hitter in baseball is hitting a home run once every 25 at-bats, according to my numbers from last week. Okay. The average, the average OPS of a two-hitter, 761. As of last week, Arraez's OPS, 706. So those are numbers against the entire league. I took the entire league's two-hitter, and I put him up against Luis Arraez.
So he's below the average.
He's below the average. He has more hits. He has a better batting average. He has more doubles. He has more triples, which is crazy. Not as many walks. He does not strike out as much. But then his OBP and his slugging is down from the average two hitter.
We don't have to finish with this, but let's just go through the number two hole hitters. Today's lineups.
Okay.
Is that fair?
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Who's Toronto? One of the best teams in baseball. Addison Barger.
I love him.
Don't even know who he is.
No.
Cincinnati Reds, pretty good team. Noelvi Marte.
All right, he's
Guardians, Angel Martinez. No, not the umpire. He's their number two hole hitter. I don't know who he is. Boston Red Sox, Alex Bregman, star. Mariners, Cal Raleigh.
Star.
He's the best, right? Nobody's going to compete with that. Rays, Yandy Diaz, former batting champ. Not three-time batting champ, but one-time batting champ. Angels, Yoan Moncada, once a first overall draft pick, but really terrible player. Bobby Witt, way better, Royals. Matt Olson, Braves, has been, slugger. Michael Bush, Cubs, pretty good. Lennon Sosa, White Sox, well, they're the White Sox. Trevor Larnach, Twins.
They're the Twins.
Don't know much about him. Schwarber, number two. You're not going to compete with him. And if you're going to tell me that Arraez has this many home runs and all the two hitters have that many, part of the reason is because two hitters are Schwarber and Raleigh.
Isn't Schwarber, well, yes, Raleigh does
skew the numbers quite a bit.
But isn't Schwarber mainly a leadoff hitter?
No, he's batting two. He's batted second almost the whole last 4 months straight.
Okay.
Trey Turner's batted first. Jackson Churio, one of the great players. Jacob Wilson, good young up and coming. Actually, very similar to Arraez. Doesn't walk much. Good batting average. Cardinals, Ivan Herrera. And Yankees, Aaron Judge. Again,
Excuse that.
So we should put, you know, I guess we should just put our best guy second because that's what they're all doing. Yordan Alvarez, another great guy. Rafael Devers, another slugger. Ezekiel Tovar. So I get it. There's a Juan Soto bat second. There's a lot of great number two hitters out there. So maybe the Padres need to change it and put, I guess, Manny's their best hitter, so he should bat second.
Or O'Hearn if they want to do the left thing. You know, they can do that.
And then you got to figure out the rest of the lineup. I just, the argument that I, if you want to tell me he's the worst, fine. Explain to me why you say that. And I can't argue that he's not as good as Soto and Devers and Judge and Schwarber and Raleigh. There's some major players there. Okay. But if you tell me that this team can't be successful with him in the second hole, I can't agree. I'm not trying to even argue with you. I just can't agree. They were in first place 10 games ago with him batting second.
And I said this before I presented this last week. I said teams can have different strategies. I have no issues with teams, with the Padres doing something that's outside the norm, as long as it works. And I think people are getting... I think people are getting things confused because on the chat it's like, hey, let's DFA Arise, and they're making fun of the people that are hating on him. But all I'm asking is for Arise to move down in the lineup. I'm not saying anything about getting him off the team or putting him on the bench. I'm just saying move him down in the lineup.
But I'm asking you and everybody.
I just gave you numbers.
I know you did. I'm asking you and everybody else. Is that going to help them get some people out in the top of the first inning? They've been down 7-0. They're losing 7-0 in every game.
Totally fair, because that's not on the Weezer.
They've lost 8 out of 10 games. And if you want to put it all on him batting second,
I
would say that's pretty misguided.
No, this little stretch right now is all pitching. But when your pitching isn't good, you have to maximize your lineup. I'm not looking to change the entire thing. I just think at-bats in the two spot right now are not the right at-bats, in my opinion.
I just think it's rich that somebody, there are people out there that are listening to this that are diehard, analytic baseball, really savant people.
Yeah.
And then there's you. You are a pretty decent little fan of baseball. But I find it kind of rich that you're sitting here telling me that you know what a number two hitter needs to be, yet a guy who's won the Manager of the Year award on a team that's been in first place all year apparently is stupid because he doesn't agree with you.
No, this is just my opinion. Okay. I'm not calling Mike Schilt stupid.
Well, then say it's your opinion because
I did. I said, in my opinion, I'm not saying that Mike Schilt's doing anything wrong. And by the way, I am not on board with firing Mike Schilt and Ruben Nebel and Victor Rodriguez. That would be crazy to do that. I don't think that Mike Schilt's a bad manager. I think that he may be a little stubborn sometimes in the way that he puts together his lineup. But I know that they have more numbers than me, and I say that all the time. So just from my view in my seat, if I can see that the two holes are kind of an issue, then I think the team can see that as well. And I don't think you're saying anything wrong either, Chris.
Well, I just think if they felt it was an issue, they would do something. The same way, and I keep saying this one, the same way they would have made a change at shortstop a long time ago if they felt one was warranted when everyone wanted Xander Bogaerts DFA'd from this team. They would have made a change. But they didn't feel one was warranted because they looked at Xander Bogaerts' track record and they knew he could be doing better. And guess what? He did.
He did. And you know what? If Luis Arraez starts hitting on Friday and he puts together a bunch of great games, keep him in the two hole. I just want the guy to hit. I just want the team to win and the guy to hit, and Luis Arraez to hit. That's what I want.
Last thing. You can save all your tweets because I'm not going anywhere near Twitter for the next month. Because I already know what you're all going to tell me. We wrap up with a final segment looking at some NFL picks, which will be a little more relaxing
when Chris returns.
Along with Scraby representing all of you and me representing me.
No, you got a lot of fans on the chat.
Anyway, enough on him. Honestly, it's not going to matter what he does if they don't start getting some people out. That's what it's going to come down to here, the final 20-some-odd games. So start Friday in Colorado. We will talk more baseball tomorrow. Roundtable, 10 o'clock in the morning. An hour of commercial-free Padre talk tomorrow night after our show. The first game of the season in the National Football League. Cowboys, Eagles. Time for Scraby and I to preview. the AFC North and the NFC North. We did the Eastern divisions yesterday. If you want to go back in the show, you can find it.
Do we want to do the West or the South tomorrow?
We'll see. Whatever you're in the mood.
All right.
But yesterday, I think if you go back, you'll realize that did we have a clean sweep on the Dolphins last? Or no, you picked the Patriots, I think.
Yes.
Wait,
I can go back and look, actually. Let me go look
anyway.
Real quick.
I know we had a clean sweep on the NFC East. We had the Cowboys last. That's where we had the sweep.
Yes, we did have a
Cowboys
sweep there.
Cowboys were last in all three picks yesterday.
Oh, yeah,
East.
Tony and I both said the Patriots.
Oh, I stuck with my Dolphins.
For the last place.
They won't let me down. All right, let's go to the NFC and AFC North. First up, the winner of the division.
For NFC North.
NFC North, yeah. Who's going to win it?
It's
a great division.
It's going to be, yes. It's going to be between the Lions and the Packers, in my opinion. But I think the Lions have a little bit more experience with the big games. And so I'm going to say the Lions win the division.
Yeah. Don't look now. I mean, first game this Sunday, Detroit at Green Bay. So right away.
Right away.
You're going to get it straight up. I think too many people are leaning to the Packers just because they got Micah Parsons.
I agree.
Who's won absolutely nothing in his life. The Lions have got to be motivated by that terrible playoff performance.
Yes.
So
yes.
I just think that's going to give them the edge. I will take the Lions.
All right, who's your last place?
You know, blindly, a lot of people are telling me that Ben Johnson is just all that and that the Bears are automatically, you know, going to be incredible. I will say this. I'd be an improvement over Matt Eberflus, so I'm sure they are going to be better. But it's, you know, it's a good division. I can't tell. You know what? I hate to pick against Kevin O'Connell because I really like him. But I do think J.J. McCarthy may be a little in over his head. A year to study was helpful.
But he didn't play.
I was never that enthralled with him at Michigan enough to think he can really carve up the NFL. I'll probably be wrong. I'll say the Vikings last.
You know, this is his rookie year on the
field. I know.
So
yeah, after a year,
my
they don't
best
really have
friend,
anybody else to go to, do they? I mean, like, if
couldn't
he
even
struggles,
tell you their backup.
Yeah, I don't know.
I hate to do this to my best friend and former teammate Kevin O'Connell, but I'm going to choose the Vikings.
Vikings as well. All right.
My breakout for or no, the we
MVP.
Do MVP. Jeez, I always get these things wrong. Jahmyr Gibbs. I'm just doing this out of the fact that he is my fantasy football running back, but he is a good player, so Jahmyr Gibbs, MVP. Who's yours, Chris?
I think he, you know, Goff is right there. It's going to be a Lion. I think they're going to win it. I love Amon-Ra St. Brown, I do, but I think Gibbs is more the focal point team.
All right.
The only thing I will caution you and every other Jahmyr Gibbs owner, they still bring old Montgomery in for a lot of those touchdowns, and that really
they
is
do.
Annoying.
They do.
it's annoying if you have Jahmyr Gibbs.
I agree with you.
But I'll take Gibbs. He's that good.
All right, the breakout star of the NFC North, mine will be Matthew Golden, Packers wide receiver. Don't know why I picked Matthew Golden.
First-round draft choice the Packers have made at wide receiver in a million years.
A long time. They never did it with Aaron Rodgers, but they did it for Jordan Love.
So
Matthew Golden, I don't know why I'm buying the hype, but I am, so I'm going to say him. What about
He's a breakout. I'm also going to go for a Packer. I'm down to two guys. I'm either down to Jameson Williams of the Lions, who is like a 60-yard reception waiting to happen every time he lines up.
But that's about it. If he doesn't get anything, it's like 3 for 20.
I know, but 3 for 120 is really good.
And a touchdown is good.
Yeah. People are telling me Tucker Kraft of the Packers is going to break loose. I have him in fantasy, so I probably wrecked it for him by doing that. Here's my breakout. Packers defense.
Oh.
Because they picked up Micah Parsons, and they're always opportunistic already.
All right.
Watch out for the Packers defense.
Wow.
That's my breakout.
What's your bold prediction for the NFC North?
Well, I'm looking forward to this one. Now that Matt Eberflus can no longer be blamed, I'm looking forward to see who Caleb Williams blames at the end of this season if he gets sacked 68 more times and he continues to struggle to show the promise and the greatness and the athleticism that was guaranteed him out of USC. I watched Bears Hard Knocks last year, and I don't think this guy has the same maniacal desire to study football and learn the game the way tip-top quarterbacks have to. I think he relies on just his athleticism. I don't think he's as well prepared as other quarterbacks. I'm calling Caleb Williams stays mediocre. That's my pick.
Oh, okay. I said, who does Caleb Williams blame? Caleb Williams, mediocre.
Stays mediocre.
My bold prediction is Micah Parsons has a terrible season after all of the attention of the offseason.
Yeah. It could be good. We got 2 minutes.
Let's go to AFC North. Let's go to the first place team, Chris.
Hi, the Ravens. I'd like to see the Bengals could unseat them, but I don't think that's
going to happen. I agree. Ravens are the winner. Last place, I say the Browns.
I want to pick the Steelers just to root against Aaron Rodgers, so I'll pick the Steelers.
All right. The MVP, I'm going to go with Lamar Jackson.
Who?
Yeah, right?
I'll take Jamar Chase just to give him a run for the money. Chase is about the best receiver we've seen in a long time.
Who's your breakout?
Fantasy breakout in the AFC North. I don't know. Does Zay Flowers qualify?
I don't know.
Or did he already break out?
I think he already broke out.
You think he already broke out? How about Chad Brown? Does he get it? Or broke out too?
That's all good.
All right, Chad Brown of the Bengals. He's one of the best running backs in the league.
Chase Brown,
yeah.
He's one of the best running backs in the league, this
Chad
Brown.
But I don't know his name. Yeah, I don't happen to know his name.
All right, my breakout is Keaton Mitchell, running back for the Ravens. Love this guy. I've been watching him for 3 years.
3 years, but Henry never gives up this position.
Very true. All right, my bold prediction for the AFC North, the Bengals are going to start 4-0 after slow starts the last few years.
Wow, out of the gate.
They open up with the Browns and then the Jags. I know they play the Broncos in their fourth game.
So you're taking advantage of a weak schedule.
Yes.
I need music for this one. This is such a great bold prediction. At the end of the season, none other than Shedeur Sanders has more passing yardage than Aaron Rodgers.
What?
There you go, Scraby. There's a bold prediction for
you. That is bold. Shedeur Sanders more passing yards than Aaron Rodgers.
Now, at midseason, Aaron Rodgers may have a big lead here, but Aaron Rodgers gets hurt. Something happens. Shedeur Sanders gets a lot of mop-up time.
Could happen.
It would be unbelievable if I get that one right. I'm going for it.
That's a good one. I mean, I appreciate you actually stepping out there and giving a real bold prediction.
Shedeur Sanders, we've made fun of this guy to no fault, I don't think, of his own. The NFL colluded not to pick him. And I don't know that it was on Dion or what, but for some reason, they didn't want to choose this guy. And I would even heard the Cleveland went against the wishes of people to pick him at all.
That's what Eric Dickerson said.
Right. So I kind of am rooting for him now at this point.
Me too.
Stick it to all these people. We got time for one more thing. Framber Valdez last night threw a pitch that his catcher did not call for. And it hit the catcher right in the stomach at 98 miles an hour. And if you watch the replay, Framber Valdez did that on purpose.
What?
There is no question in mine or anyone else's mind, even though Framber Valdez has denied it vehemently for the last 24 hours.
His agent is saying that too.
Yeah. Watch it, and you tell me. If he didn't do it on purpose, there would have been an immediate reaction. But he doesn't react at all. He wanted to hit his catcher. They were mad because the previous hitter had given up a grand slam.
Valdez blamed
the catcher for the mishap. Watch it. You'll see what I'm talking about.
That's kind of crazy.
We'll talk to you tomorrow at 10 a.m. for the roundtable. Gwen and Chris tomorrow at 2. Adios.